the same creature was sat by the dining room fire one evening. When our man went into the room, it ran up to him through the hall under the stairs. He followed with a candle and searched, but it was departed. The last time he saw it in the kitchen, like a white rabbit, which seems likely to be some witch. Mr. Wesley, after 9, Robert Brown, sitting alone by the fire in the back kitchen, something came out of the cooper hole. What in tarnation is a cooper hole? Something came out of the cooper hole like a... Do you want me to finish this? I don't know whether anybody's believing this about John or not. Now, I was reading about the Epworth poltergeist. Nobody can question John Wesley. I mean, he founded the Methodist Church. And his daddy, Reverend Samuel Wesley, was a fine Christian reverend. That blowtorch melted my nose. Now, I was reading about the John Wesley poltergeist. Everybody heard knockings, tearings, scrapings, draggings of the feet, the maids, the sisters, John himself, his father, Reverend Samuel, and his mother. And they're trying to convince his skeptical brother Samuel. Now, we just joined Los Angeles. I can't catch you up. I mean, we're in a hurry to finish this. We've been working on it all night. Finally, Samuel says, I want to know whether there was nothing ever seen but any. Well, I don't know whether any saw nothing. But Emily said something was thrice seen. Thrice. My hair on fire. Something was thrice seen. The first time by my mother. Under my sister's bed. Like a badger. Mr. Wesley, I know not whether it was in the morning after Sunday the 23rd, my wife looked under the bed and thought something ran from thence, but could not well tell of what shape, but thought it most like a badger. Mrs. Wesley, something ran out pretty much like a badger and seemed to run directly under Emily's petticoats. Emily, she's the one to talk. The same creature. You notice how she leaves out what happened under the petticoats. Strange girl. The same creature was sat. That's what you people have been doing the last several years. Was sat. The same creature was sat by the dining room fire one evening. When our man went into the room, it ran up by him through the hall under the stairs. He followed with a candle and searched. Searched. Did you ever have this much fun on Halloween? There's more fun pushing over outside toilets. You know, the fun went out of Halloween when we got modern. I wore myself out one whole Halloween in Los Angeles trying to find one. Emily, the same creature, was sat by the dining room fire one evening. When our man went into the room, it ran up by him through the hall under the stairs. He followed with a candle and searched, but it was departed. It was sat. Now it was departed. Now that's what you do when we finish here. Or rather, that's what you did when we was finished. The last time he saw it in the kitchen like a white rabbit, which seems likely to be some witch. That was the explanation in those days for everything. Mr. Wesley, after 9, Robert Brown, sitting alone with a fire in the back kitchen, something came out of the Cooper hole. Now, that's where we were, at the Cooper hole. And when we tried to find out if the folks in Michigan and Augusta, Georgia, wanted to know what came out of the Cooper hole, where do you think we should try to find out from Los Angeles? No. Something came out of the Cooper hole like a rabbit, but less. Now, a rabbit, but less. Have you ever seen a rabbit, but less? You know, that would be scary, a buttless rabbit. Wouldn't it? I mean, with my blowtorch, if I found it, it would butt less, I'll tell you that. A buttless rabbit. John Wesley's home. Now, that's the place to find the buttless rabbit. What I said. Now, do you all want to find out about this buttless rabbit? And it turned around 5 times very swiftly. Well, they less sure, but you'd turn around 5 times very swiftly too, would you? Its ears laid flat upon its neck. I don't want to hear any more. And its little feet stood straight up. I mean, that poor rabbit, with its butt less, turned around 5 times very swiftly, its ears lay flat upon its... Am I boring you? After 9, Robert Brown, sitting alone by the fire, in the back kitchen, something came out of the Cooper hole like a rabbit, but less. There we go again. It's that but less that gets me every time. Can't make no progress past the buttless. Something came out of the Cooper hole. Well, had no business getting in that hole, did he? Now, the moral of this story is, you get in the Cooper hole, you may be less a butt. Stay out of them Cooper holes. Mr. Wesley, this is John's dad. After 9... Robert Brown, why aren't you answering them phones? After 9, Robert Brown, sitting alone by the fire in the back kitchen, something came out of the Cooper hole like a rabbit. Buttless, but less. They don't believe me. Come over here. Something came out of the Cooper hole like a rabbit, but less. See? And? But less and. Am I boring you? And turned round 5 times very swiftly. Now, 5 is a number of grace. Its ears lay flat upon its neck, and its little feet stood straight up. Wouldn't yours? Did you ever less a butt? Mr. Brown, he ran after it with the tongs in his hands. But when he could find nothing, well, my Lord, it lost its... He ran after it with the tongs in his hands. But when he could find nothing, he was frightened and went to the maid in the parlor. Don't chase a buttless rabbit when you can go to the maid in the parlor. And this is John Wesley's house. It's horrible. Samuel. Now Samuel, he had nothing to say about the buttless rabbit or the maid in the parlor. Has it never at all disturbed you since the 28th of December? Mr. Wesley. Emily. The same creature was sat by the dining room fire one evening. This is for the people that just joined us. You'd be mad if I didn't finish, wouldn't you? And they'd be mad if I didn't catch him up. I feel your animosity. Emily. The same creature was sat by the dining room fire one evening. I'd like to kill you is what some of you are saying. I know the feeling. That's the way I feel on the last day of the month when I don't have my budget, like tonight. The same creature was sat by the dining room fire one evening. When our man went into the room, it ran up by him through the hall under the stairs. He followed with a candle and searched, but it was departed. The last time he saw it in the kitchen like a white rabbit, which seems likely to be some witch. Mr. Wesley, after 9, Robert Brown, sitting alone by the fire in the back kitchen, something came out of the Cooper hole like a rabbit, but less. Can't seem to get by that. And turned around 5 times very swiftly. Its ears lay flat upon its neck. Now, you know there wasn't anybody drunk in the Wesley household. And its little feet stood straight up. He ran after it with the tongs in his hand. But when he could find nothing, he was frightened and went to the maid in the parlor with the tongs in his hand. If I were that maid, I'd have left. I'm not sure that they believe that that's what this says. Something came out of the Cooper hole like a rabbit, but less. And turned around 5 times very swiftly. Its ears lay flat upon its neck. And its little feet stood straight up. Now, I don't want you to miss anything here. He ran after it with the tongs in his hand. But when he could find nothing, he was frightened and went to the maid in the parlor. Now, what was she going to do? He had the tongs. Yes, he did. And in John Wesley's house. Samuel. Has it never at all disturbed you since the 28th of December? Mr. Wesley, from that time till January the 24th, we were quiet. One good job with the tongs. This day, at morning prayer, the family heard the usual knocks at the prayer for the king. At night, they were more distinct, both in the prayer for the king and for the prince. And one very loud knock at the amen was heard by my wife and most of my children at the inside of my bed. I heard nothing myself. Emily. She's the one with the petticoats. Lord knows what's under it now. Then it intermitted for a fortnight or more. Let's try that again. Come over here. They don't believe me. Then it intermitted. What it says here? Emily says that. If you'd had a badger up your petticoat and seen a buckless rabbit running from the tongs, oh, Lord, help us. Come on down, Lord. Then it intermitted a fortnight or more. Fortnight or more. I ain't ever been intermitted a fortnight or more. When it began again, it knocked only on nights. Mr. Wesley, Sunday, January 27th, two soft strokes at the morning prayers for King George above the stairs. Emily. I'm not sure I want to hear any more from Emily. It grew less and less troublesome till at last it went quite away. Mr. Wesley, as for the noises, etc., and so forth in our family, I thank God we now are all quiet. Casualty list, one buttless rabbit. And a very disturbed Wesley household. I finished. Now, that, my friends, is the Wesley household. How can you doubt that? Now, let's get David delivered. Let's get him exercised. Now, you remember that doll? Halloween night. Remember that doll? It's a damn voodoo doll, that's what it is. Lou Bertler blurted it out. I told them about that thing a long time ago. The doll was just taking advantage of them. Let's put it this way. I didn't like the doll. The doll didn't like me. He said, the thing's got a mind, and dolls don't have minds, right? So from the beginning, I didn't think this thing moving around their apartment was cute. Remember those two nurses? Had a rag doll. They'd move around from room to room. They went to see a medium. Medium called up a spirit, said it was a little girl that had died some time back when there were fields where they lived and they could play in the fields. Now there's nobody but grown-ups. And the spirit was lonely and it moved in. Or came into their house and tried to get their attention by moving the doll around. Remember that? And they were compassionate nurses. They'd gone to this medium. But then the doll became occupied with this spirit. And old Lou, the boyfriend of one of the nurses, he didn't like it. Now this is from The Demonologist by Gerald Brittle, The Extraordinary Career of Ed and Lorraine Warren. Same guy Gerald Brittle wrote The Devil in Connecticut. We haven't finished that one yet, have we? Now, Lou, he didn't like the doc. Okay, Lou, Ed said, I think it's time you told your side of the thing. Well, let me put it this way. I didn't like the doll, and the doll didn't like me right back. He said, things got a mind, dolls don't have minds, right? So from the beginning, I didn't think this thing moving around their apartment was cute. Well, the priest said you'd been physically attacked. When did that happen? Well, that happened here in this apartment when Angie and I were alone together, Lou said. It was about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and we were reading over maps because I was going off on a trip the next day. Everything was quiet at the time. Suddenly, we both heard sounds in Donna's bedroom that made us think that someone had broken into the apartment. I quietly got up and tiptoed to the bedroom door, which was closed. This is Lou. I waited until the noises stopped, then I carefully opened the door and reached in and switched on the light. Won't you answer the phones? Nobody was in there, except the Annabelle doll was tossed on the floor in the corner. I went in alone, walked over to the thing to see if anything unusual had happened. But as I got close to the doll, I got the distinct impression that somebody was behind me. Now, I'll tell you what I want you to do, you engineers. Stop what I told you to do. Just get the Sunday morning service ready from the top. I'm going to go ahead and finish some stories. Halloween. Now, Halloween means it's Hallowed Eve, because it's the night before All Saints' Day. If you weren't a martyr, you have to wait a day. Then it's All Souls Day. Where did it come from in the first place? Well, we'll see. I went in alone, walked over to the thing to see if there's anything unusual that had happened. But as I got close to the doll, I got the distinct impression that somebody was behind me. I swung around instantly and... Well, he won't talk about that part, Angie said. When Lou turned around, there wasn't anybody there. But he suddenly yelled and grabbed for his chest. He was doubled over, cut and bleeding when I got to him. Blood was all over his shirt. Lou was shaking and scared, and we went back out into the living room. We then opened up his shirt, and there was on his chest what looked to be a sort of a claw mark. Can I see the mark, Ed asked. It's gone now, the young man told him. I saw the cuts on his chest too, Donna spoke up in support. How many were there, Ed asked. 7, said Angie. 3 were vertical, 4 were horizontal. Did the cuts have any sensation? All the cuts were hot, like they were burns, Lou told him. Did you ever have cuts or wounds in the same area of your chest before this incident happened, questioned Ed. No, the young man replied. Did you lose consciousness before or after the attack took place? No, was his answer again. How long did it take the wounds to heal? Lorraine wanted to know. They healed up almost immediately, said Lou. They were half gone the next day and fully gone the day after. Has anything else happened since that time? Asked Ed. No, came the joint reply. Who did you first contact after the incident occurred? I contacted an Episcopal priest named Father Hagen, Donna told Ed and Lorraine. Too hot in here, isn't it? Is it too hot? Yeah, too hot. Why did you decide to call him instead of a doctor, Lorraine asked. Well, do you think someone off the street would have believed where that claw mark on Lou's chest came from? Donna asked rhetorically. Besides, we agreed the cuts weren't half as important as how Lou got them. We wanted to know if this was going to happen again. Our problem was who to ask. You want to go on with this? This is Annabelle. Was there some reason why you specifically called on Father Hagen? Lorraine questioned. Yeah, we trust him, said Donna. He teaches nearby here at a junior college, plus Angie and I both know him. What did you tell the priest? Asked Ed. The whole story. About Annabelle and how it moved on its own, especially about Lou's cuts, Donna replied. At first, we were afraid he might not believe us, but that was no problem. He believed us all right, although, she finished, he said he'd never heard of such a thing happening in these days. At the time, we were all scared out of our wits, and I asked him what he thought had happened to us. What'd he tell you, Ed? Asked her. He said he didn't want to speculate, but he did seem to feel it was a spiritual matter, possibly an important one, and said he was going to contact someone higher up in the church, Father Cook. That's what he did, Ed told her. Angie then asked the Warrens concernedly, what do you think did that to Lou's chest? Well, let's discuss that in a minute, Ed answered. First, to finish up, let me ask you a few questions. Has this kind of thing ever happened to you before, to any of you? No, they told the Warrens. Did the name Annabelle or Annabelle Higgins mean anything to you in real life before this incident occurred? No, they again answered. Although you never saw anything spirit-wise in here, Luce said he felt a presence in the room before he got hurt. There is something in here, Angie stated firmly. In fact, I can't even stand to be here. We decided to get a new apartment. We're moving out. I'm afraid that's not going to help you very much, Ed said dryly. What do you mean? Donna asked, astonished. To put it in a nutshell, folks, you inadvertently brought a spirit into this apartment and into your lives. You're not going to be able to walk away from it that easily. Ed's statement was understandably troubling. Prudently, he and Lorraine remained silent and allowed the three young people to collect their thoughts. After a long minute, Ed spoke again. We're going to be able to help you beginning right now, today. First thing I'd like to do is to call Father Cook. Now we've got an Episcopalian in. We've had Catholics and Shamans and Pentecostals and Methodists. Now we've got Episcopalian. First thing I'd like to do is call Father Cook and have him come over here. Then you're going to have to understand what has happened and why Lou got that ugly claw mark on his chest. May I use the phone? Ed had no trouble getting hold of the Episcopal priest who had been waiting for him to telephone. Lorraine, in the meantime, walked into the living room to discern the spirit presence that was in the apartment. Remember, she's the parapsychic, the clairvoyant. To discern the spirit presence was in the apartment. After the phone call, the Warrens both returned to the kitchen with the others. All right, Ed said matter-of-factly. When Father Cook comes here, he's going to perform a sort of blessing, an exorcism of the premises. I knew it, Lou proclaimed. I knew it would lead to this. Yes, I think you did, Ed told him. But I'm not sure any of you know the reason why. To begin with, there is no Annabelle. There never was. You were duped. However, we are dealing with a spirit here. The teleportation of the doll while you were out of the apartment, the appearance of notes written on parchment, the manifestation of three symbolic drops of blood, plus the gestures the doll made, are all meaningful. They tell me there was intent, which means there was an intelligence behind the activity. But ghosts, human spirits, plain and simply, can't bring on phenomena of this nature and intensity. They don't have the power. Instead, what's taken over here is something inhuman. Inhuman? Lou asked, perplexed. Demonic, Ed told him immediately. Ordinarily, people are never bothered by inhuman demonic spirits unless they do something to bring the force into their lives. And I regret to say you girls did something to bring the demonic into your lives. Like what? Donna urged, urgently wanting to know. Well, for the most part, you made honest mistakes, but in this case, you made the wrong mistakes, replied Ed. Your first mistake was to have given the doll so much recognition. You see, the reason why the spirit moved the doll in the first place was to draw attention to itself. Once it had your attention, it exploited you. Rather than reciprocating your care and concern, it simply brought you fear and even injury. This is the nature of the inhuman spirit. It's negative. It enjoys inflicting pain right at the very beginning. You should have been intolerant of the unnatural activity. However, instead of cutting the thing off at the start, it aroused your curiosity, and that fact got noticed supernaturally. Your next mistake was in calling a medium, Ed went on. Whoever functioned as the medium was unwittingly used as an instrument of communication with the entity. During the sitting, this inhuman spirit fed you false information. The demonic is the liar. It's even been called the father of lies. Well, you were lied to by a spirit of deception. Unknowingly, you believed the lie. Your worst mistake, though, was in giving the spirit the permission it needed to move into the doll. That's what it wanted. And it preyed off your ignorance of its existence to do so. Why? Asked Angie. Because to really interfere in your life, the demonic has somehow got to get your permission to do so. And unfortunately, through your own free will, you gave it that permission. It was like handing a maniac a loaded gun. Then the doll is possessed? Questioned Donna. No. The doll is not possessed. Spirits don't possess things. Spirits possess people. Ed informed her. Instead, the spirit simply moved the doll around, gave it the illusion of being alive. But because you girls believed this was the spirit of a little girl, Annabelle, the appearance and reality were the same to you. It's too cold now. In short, you left yourselves wide open, and a deceptive, negative spirit took advantage of you. With your permission, of course, this is how the phenomenon was brought on. Ed paused to see if there were any further questions, but none were asked. Now, what happened to Lou earlier this week, Ed proceeded, was bound to occur sooner or later. In fact, you all stood in jeopardy of coming under possession with this spirit. This is what the thing was really after. But Lou here didn't believe in the charade. So he was an ongoing threat to the entity. One way or another, there was bound to be a showdown. And what happened? For starters, it tried to strangle Lou to death. When that failed, it cut him with a symbolic claw mark. We've seen this claw mark in other cases. It's a telltale sign of an inhuman presence. You got off easy this time. Had this spirit been given another week or two, you might all have been killed. Is this demonic spirit in the apartment now? Angie asked, petrified. Yes, I'm afraid so, Lorraine asked her. There's only one entity involved, but its behavior is completely unpredictable. The Warren's words seemed to hit home. You're for real, aren't you? Donna said incredulously. The front doorbell rang. Now, you're starting to get a certain common thread in all of these. Now, this is the devil in Connecticut. We were in the middle of an exorcism. David, the devil or demon-possessed boy in Connecticut. This is another book, The Devil in Connecticut. Now, I need to find something here. Still too cold. I want to find where we were. Father Verguluk was in the midst of exercising David. Can I just pick up where I left off? Or you want to go back to Annabelle? Which one do you want? You can't have both. You got to choose. You got to choose. Which do you want? Annabelle? Annabelle? Or David? In Brookfield, the task of exercising this pernicious, multifaceted, diabolical power from David continued, meanwhile, without a let-up. That's where we were in the middle of the exorcism. Satan, take my life, take my soul, take me, Satan, take my soul. The pleas were bellowed out in David's voice, or what sounded like him, in resistance to the increasing commands of exorcism. I don't believe this story, but it's true. Emotions were frantic, nerves were raw. Mommy, mommy, please, this is David Michael Glatzel. Please make them stop. I can't take it anymore. Tell them to stop, please. Mommy, hurry, I need rest. I'm going to die, I'm going to die. Again and again, the possessing entity brought David to the point of death, trying to blackmail the priest to stop. Many times the tactic almost worked. That was the situation at 4:30 a.m. It's killing my baby. It's killing him, Judy shrieked, finally breaking down, the mother. I'll kill him. I'll kill him. I swear I'll kill him, the diabolical thing declared. On the floor, David lay stone cold still. It appeared as though David had actually experienced a heart attack. The pulse and heartbeat were nil. The boy's skin grew white. His body lay motionless, seemingly depleted of life. By the time a full minute had passed, those in the room couldn't help but take it for real. At this uniquely wrong point in time, Arne Johnson reaffirmed the tragic mistake he'd made before. All night long, he'd been holding David's arms and legs. All night, he had fought and overpowered the physical strength of the entity. Now David lay limp, white, and apparently dying. Desperate to save David's life, Arne declared, "Let David live. Take me on. Come into me." Deep, coarse laughter promptly erupted from David's inert body. Suckers, fools. The action caused Lorraine to burst into tears. I immediately sensed that Arne Johnson had made a very grave mistake, that somehow he would be made to pay for his challenge. Not even a priest would say such a thing. Arne made the statement selflessly to help David at the expense of himself. But he was ignorant of the responsibility he was taking on by making such an invitation. He didn't know that this thing, instead of releasing David, could actually possess them both, each of them in their own way. Well, you know that the main thrust of this book is to lead on to the trial and sentencing of Arne Johnson to jail until the year 2001, because subsequent to the exorcism, the demon did continue to possess Arne. And he was wrestling with a friend that had gotten drunk, trying to restrain him and make him stay in his house. Threw the friend from him. The witnesses that were there saw him throw the friend from him under a demon possession burst of strength, but no knife in his hand. Yet 20 feet from him, the friend thrown from him is stabbed. The first witnesses saw two stab marks, ultimately in the morgue. It then became five. Arne offered as his defense, he didn't do it, that the demon did it when he was 20 feet from him. The judge would not allow such a defense and reinterpreted the defense into insanity and then denied the plea because a technical form had not been filed requesting the insanity plea prior. So he was pleading not guilty by version of the fact that the demon had done it. That was denied, and it was too late for technicality to apply the insanity plea. So he is then condemned and sentenced till the year 2001. I received a call the other night that Arne Johnson was listening in the jail where he's been sentenced. The only trial of its kind in the world in Connecticut, where every single person in and around the scene is convinced Arne did not stab the person that is now dead and for whose death Arne is serving the prison sentence. But having done that as an act of compassion for David, Father Vergulich had to stop, take Arne aside, and sternly warn him, "Don't ever say that again." By 5:30 a.m., the possessing entity had indulged in every possible ploy. It then switched to arguing and rationalizing. The voice came forth from the boy, "I don't need this fat little body to be here. I have been here before, and I'll be here later." Sure, he had now possessed Arne too. The time had come. That which possessed David Glatzel could either remain and be forced to capitulate to the commands of the exorcist, or it could stop the possession and withdraw. The latter possibility posed the largest danger, for if the entity withdrew without concession, control would be lost, possession might end, but the case would not. "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave this boy's body. Begone, leave him in peace," Father Vergulich commanded. The response, "His soul is mine. His soul is his own. It is of God, not you," Father Vergulich told him. "Obey the commands of God set down to you. Leave this vessel of the Lord. Be gone from this lamb's body. Depart this seat of God's creation and return to whence you came." In response came a sudden gasping heave. David's body, restrained both at hands and feet, arched violently into a bow, then froze in that posture. His breathing stopped. You want me to go back to Annabelle? Now, which one do you want, Annabelle or this one? Annabelle. David or Annabelle? Which do you want, David or Annabelle? Let's let them vote. You know, I've been reading all these stories and keeping you on edge, but I have a purpose in the teaching, and that is to show the common denominators in all of these stories. I don't want to just create fear. I've told you, if you have faith, you don't have to worry. Greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. But you can't claim that promise of God's presence in you unless you are doing what gets his presence in you. And I'm sorry, keeping rules and regulations and legalism and usual traditional Christian behavior, liturgy and ritual and legalism won't do it. Christ is formed in your heart by faith. That's why the teaching that we're doing, I think it's a reformation. The Reformation started with the realization by Martin Luther, the just shall live by faith. And then the Reformation fell into its forms and regulations. In Protestantism, it quit protesting and started protecting. And it went straight into a ritual and legalism and rules of its own.